Chapter 52. Velikov and Maisky stood on a balcony three levels above the Electronic Listening Center and looked down on a small army of men and women who manned the sophisticated electronic receiving equipment. 24 hours a day, giant antennas on Cuba intercepted United States civilian telephone calls and military radio signals, relaying them to Cayo Santa Maria, where they were fed into the computers for decoding and analysis. "A truly superb job, General," said Maisky. "The reports on your installation have been far too modest." "A day doesn't go by when we don't continue the expansion," Velikov said proudly. "Besides the business end of the complex, there is a well-supplied dining room and a physical conditioning center with exercise equipment and a sauna. We even have an entertainment room and a barber shop." Maisky's gaze rose to two screens, each 10 by 15 feet, on different walls. The left screen contained computer-generated displays, while the right showed various data and intricate graphs. "Have your people discovered the status of the moon colonists yet?" The general nodded and picked up a telephone. He spoke a few words into the receiver while looking down on the busy equipment floor. A staff member at a console looked up and waved a hand. Then the two screens went dark for a brief instant and returned to life with a new data display. "A complete rundown," said Velikov, pointing to the right screen. "We can monitor almost everything that is transmitted between their astronauts and Houston Control. As you can see, the moon colonist's lunar transporter docked 3 hours ago at the space station." Maisky was fascinated as his eyes traveled over the display information. He could not bring himself to accept the fact that American intelligence undoubtedly knew as much, if not more, about Soviet space efforts. "Do they transmit in code?" he asked. "Occasionally, if it is a military mission, but NASA usually talks to their astronauts quite openly. As you can see on the data display, the Houston Ground Control Center has ordered the Gettysburg to postpone its scheduled departure for tomorrow morning." "I don't like the look of that." "I see nothing suspicious. The President probably wants time to mount a massive propaganda campaign to announce another American space triumph. Or they may be wise to our intentions." Maisky then became quiet, lost in thought. His eyes had a worried look, and he clasped and unclasped his hands nervously. Velikov looked at him with amusement. "If this in any way upsets your plans, I could break in on Houston Control's frequency and issue a false command." "You can do that?"
"I can."
"Simulate an order for the shuttle to depart the space station for re-entry?"
"Yes."
"And deceive the commanders of the station and the shuttle into believing they're hearing a familiar voice?"
"They'll never detect the difference.
Our computerized synthesizers have more than enough taped transmissions to perfectly imitate voice, accent, and verbal mannerisms of at least 20 different officials of NASA."
"What's to stop Houston Control from countermanding the order?"
"I can scramble their transmissions until it's too late for them to stop the shuttle. Then, if the instructions you gave us from our space scientists are correct, we'll override the craft's flight systems and bring her down at Santa Clara." Maisky looked at Velikov long and steadily. Then he said, "Do it." The President was dead asleep when the phone beside his bed softly chimed. He rolled over and read the luminous dial on his wristwatch. 1:10 in the morning. Then he answered.
"Go ahead."
The voice that replied was Dan Fawcett's.
"Sorry to wake you, Mr. President, but something has come up that I thought you'd want to know about."
"I'm listening. What is it?"
"I've just received a call from Irwin Mitchell at NASA. He said the Gettysburg has cast off from Columbus and is orbiting in preparation for re-entry."
The President sat bolt upright, waking his wife beside him.
"Who gave the order?" he demanded.
"Mitchell can't say. All communication between Houston and the space station is down because of some strange interference."
"Then how has he confirmed the shuttle's departure?"
"General Fisher has been tracking and monitoring Columbus at the Space Operations Center in Colorado Springs since Steinmetz left Jersey Colony. The sensitive cameras at the center caught the movement when Gettysburg left the station's dock. He called me as soon as he was informed."
The President pounded the mattress in dismay.
"Damn." "I took the liberty of alerting Jess Simmons.
He's already scrambled two Air Force tactical squadrons into the air to fly escort and protect the shuttle as soon as she drops through the atmosphere. How much time do we have before the Gettysburg lands? From initial descent preparation to touchdown, about 2 hours. The Russians are behind this. The general consensus, acknowledged Fawcett. We can't be sure yet, but all indications point to Cuba as the source of Houston's radio interference problem. When does Brogan's special team hit Cayo Santa Maria? Oh, 200 hours. Who's leading them in? One moment while I look up the name in yesterday's CIA report. Fawcett left the line for no more than 30 seconds before he returned. The mission is being directed by Marine Colonel Ramon Kleist. I know the name. Kleist was a Congressional Medal of Honor winner. Here's something else. What? Kleist's men are being guided by Dirk Pitt. The president sighed almost sadly. He's already given too much. Is his presence absolutely required? It was Pitt or nobody, said Fawcett. Can they destroy the jamming center in time? In all honesty, I'd have to say it's a toss-up. Tell Jess Simmons to stand by in the war room, said the president solemnly. If anything goes wrong, I fear the only alternative left for us to keep the Gettysburg and her valuable cargo out of Soviet hands is to shoot her down. Do you read me, Dan?
Yes, sir, Fawcett said, his face suddenly white.
I'll give him your message.